morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. East African community leaders approve a process to admit the Democratic Republic of Congo.
I'm very happy today we approved the process for the admission of the Democratic Republic of Congo into the community. This is because Congo is really a part of East Africa historically.
Meanwhile, an operation is underway to repatriate thousands of Congolese refugees from Zambia. Senegal's president wants to reintroduce the position of prime minister. Malawi's president announces a plan to help the country's struggling economy. And unvaccinated Malawi members of parliament will now be allowed on the premises of parliament building.
We've lost quite a good number of members of parliament, ministers, and as a preventative measure, it is true, those that are not vaccinated cannot be allowed to enter the parliamentary premises.
And 50 Ugandan staff and members of parliament test positive for COVID-19 while in Tanzania. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Heads of state of the East African Community, the EAC, have agreed to a process for granting membership to the Democratic Republic of Congo. As Eid Uwesu reports from Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, the leaders met Wednesday in a virtual meeting and empowered the group's secretariat to finalize the remaining steps for making the DRC the seventh member of the regional community.
Your Excellency.
Speaking during the virtual summit, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni said the DRC deserves EAC membership.
I'm very happy. Today we admitted, we approved the process for the admission of the Democratic Republic of Congo into the community. This is because, as I said in the private meeting, in the closed meeting, Congo is really a part of East Africa historically, especially the eastern part of Congo. They speak Swahili. They are similar to our tribes here. And it is colonialism which had kept Congo in another arrangement.
The Democratic Republic of Congo, with a population of 93 million people, is seen as strategic for the region's growth because of its vast natural resources. When it is finally admitted, the 2.4 million square kilometer DRC will be the largest country in the EAC bloc after Tanzania. Tanzanian President Samia Suluhu agreed with the President Museveni and said the time is ripe for DRC to be a member of the East African community.
We all know the importance of DRC joining our community, as all partner states have long and close cooperation by either bordering or having trade relationship, which will enhance prosperity of our people and the region. Moreover, DRC is only joining her brothers and sisters.
Rwandan President Paul Kagame says he looks forward to the expeditious conclusion of admitting the DRC.
Rwanda welcomes the progress made with regards to the admission in the East African community of the Democratic Republic of Congo. We look forward to the prompt conclusion of the remaining admission procedures.
EAC General Secretary Peter Mathuki said the Secretariat had already completed 7 out of 10 steps in the procedure for admitting DRC.
I'm pleased to report that we have undertaken 7 out of the 10 agreed steps, and now we have made progress. I want to thank you, Excellencies, for the support that you have accorded to us.
Once the admission process is complete, the DRC would be the youngest member of the EAC after South Sudan, which was admitted in 2016. Political analyst says the admission of DRC will boost the productivity and trade among East African community members. For VOA Daybreak Africa, I am Eid Wesu, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
An operation is underway to repatriate thousands of Congolese refugees from Zambia to the homes they fled 4 years ago in fear of their lives. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Inter-ethnic clashes and fighting between Congolese security forces and militia groups in parts of the southeastern Democratic Republic of Congo triggered a mass exodus of refugees to Zambia in 2017. The violence in Okatanga province has subsided, allowing for the safe return of refugees to their home country. Consequently, nearly 5,000 Congolese refugees have decided to return home under the auspices of the UN Refugee Agency and Zambian authorities. A first group of 100 people left Mantapala settlement in Zambia's Luapula province Tuesday for Poeto territory in Okatanga. UNHCR spokesman Baba Baluch says security in the area has improved sufficiently to allow for the return of the refugees in safety and dignity.
I mean, we have to go and check with refugees about their intentions. For us, the time is right for returns when the refugees decide to do so. Even before the start of this assisted voluntary returns, some of the refugees had already returned back to DRC in this part.
Baluch says an estimated 20,000 refugees have spontaneously left Zambia since 2018 to return to the areas of origin, mainly to Poeto territory.
The humanitarian community remains engaged with Zambia on the Zambian side, but also on the Congolese side as well, where we are present. UNHCR is working with authorities in DRC and other partners on reintegration projects, including education, health, and agriculture.
Baluch says two buses and two trucks transported the first group of refugees and their belongings to their homes in the DRC. He says the returnees will receive a cash grant to help them pick up their lives again. The UNHCR says the voluntary repatriation will continue into 2022 until all those wishing to return are safely settled back home. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This month, Senegal's President Macky Sall announced he would try to reinstate the post of prime minister after he abolished it when he was elected to his second term in 2019. The measure has been approved by parliament, but the move has come under criticism from some opponents. Ulemata Sumare, an associate analyst at Control Risks, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the political implications of the decision.
The official reason is because in 2022, he will assume the chairmanship of the African Union. So he will be focused a bit more on a regional and continental agenda, knowing that Senegal obviously has at the moment a very tense social climate, but also a very busy electoral calendar of its own. The president said that we'll need somebody who will sort of help him support governance, but also that fast-track decision-making that he tried to take on in 2019. And I think that he was also very honest in admitting that he removed this strategic role because he wanted to take on a more direct version of governance, and that at this point he requires additional help, hence why bringing back the role of prime minister.
What are some of the critiques that have come out about this at his actual announcement to reintroduce the post?
So there are some critiques and some concerns that obviously this is a political move. And again, when we look at the electoral calendar, some people have said, well, is it now because he needs sort of either a designated successor or perhaps somebody who will be able to lead the ruling coalition into those legislative elections at some point in mid-2022. There was also in 2019 some critics that, well, he had consolidated power by removing the prime minister. So I think on both sides, when he removed it, there was critics about having a strong presidency. And now that he is bringing it back, it's a critic about, well, being able to make constitutional revisions based on a more political and strategic agenda. But we will have to see also if it is perhaps the first sign that President Macky Sall is going to designate a successor or somebody who could, in 2024, be the ruling party's candidate.
And yeah, during Macky Sall's tenure, he has come under fire for kind of wresting control of the judiciary, and also when he abolished the prime minister post in 2019. Do you think that, is it too easy to change the Senegalese constitution in terms of things like this?
So I believe that when you do control the National Assembly, you obviously have that advantage where you can table draft bills or constitutional revisions. And there have been some criticism about how some of these changes have been done in recent years. But I think that when it comes to, you know, those sort of high-level decisions, it is very easy at the moment for the ruling party to table those revisions because they have a majority. And I think that that's when the legislative elections in 2022 will be very important, because the opposition will want to be in a position to sort of block some of these either more controversial bills or more controversial laws. We did see throughout the year in Senegal that there was a lot of criticism about how the government went about tabling these emergency sort of votes at the National Assembly. We saw it in June with the Penal Code, and we're seeing it now as well. But also on the side of the opposition, it is difficult to contest when you don't have the numbers at the National Assembly. So at the legislative election, there will be that push to sort of either reduce the number of seats that the ruling coalition has, or just for the opposition to be more united in terms of how they vote so that they could.
That was Ulemata Sumare, an associate analyst at Control Risks. She was speaking to Ricky Schreier from Dakar, Senegal. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 23rd. Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwera has announced a plan to help the country's struggling economy recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. The plan, which includes government-wide spending cuts, follows nationwide protests against the high cost of living in Malawi, one of Africa's poorest nations. Lamek Masina speaks to analysts about the plan in this report from Blantyre.
President Lazarus Chakwera's economic recovery plan was announced 2 days after Chakwera's predecessor, Peter Mutharika, criticized the Chakwera's administration for ruining the country's economy. It also follows a series of nationwide protests against the high cost of living driven by inflation, which has now reached 11%. During his national address Tuesday evening, Chakwera acknowledged the economic problems facing the country.
Our economy is bleeding from four wounds at once. The first long-term wound our economy is bleeding from is its structural limitations. For ours is an agro-based economy that has a narrow production base.
He said, as such, any plan must help restructure the economy by stimulating sectors like mining, infrastructure development, and manufacturing. However, Chakwera said the main cause of the country's economic slowdown is COVID-19.
The third long-term wound our economy is bleeding from is the COVID-19 pandemic, which is now in its fourth wave of not only inflicting swaths of the population, but also tearing into the very fabric of our economic development.
Since the onset of the pandemic last year, Malawi has registered over 60,000 cases and more than 2,300 deaths. Twice, the government has declared a national disaster with accompanying restrictions of movement. Chakwera said although the restrictions have saved lives, they have caused inevitable damage to livelihoods.
Toward that end, the socioeconomic recovery plan I'm announcing today includes interventions aimed at intensifying efforts to vaccinate the population. So far, only 500,000 people in this country are fully vaccinated, which is less than 5% of the targeted 11 million people we need to vaccinate to reach herd immunity.
As part of the enforcement of the plan, Chakwera ordered government officials to emulate his example by reducing spending.
And I'm already scaling down my travel plans for the recovery period. And so I expect every ministry under my administration to do the same.
Bechani Chereni is a lecturer in economics at the Malawi University of Business and Applied Sciences. He commends the plan, but says it falls short on practical ways for Malawi to increase its export base.
We must know that if, as long as we continue to be an importing country, our inflation is not going to go down at all. The cost of living is going to continue either to rise or to be where it is now. Why? Because we are not producing our own commodities. And if you look at this plan, it is not meant to trigger manufacturing.
Despite a government promise to modernize and industrialize the economy, near 80% of Malawians are employed in agriculture, according to a recent World Bank report. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
In Malawi, members of parliament who are not vaccinated against COVID-19 will not be allowed on the premises of the parliament building. The Malawi online Nyasa Times publication quotes Speaker of Parliament Catherine Gotani Hara as saying that the measure is necessary to prevent the spread of the virus in the legislature. The government is also reportedly planning to introduce similar vaccine mandates for all citizens starting January 2022. Victor Musuwa is a member of parliament from the opposition Democratic Progressive Party. He says he agrees with the speaker's mandate, but Malawians also have the freedom to obey or not to obey a government mandate.
You know, Parliament of Malawi has been a casualty of the past 3 waves of COVID. We've lost quite a good number of members of Parliament, ministers. So this fourth wave of COVID has started while we were meeting as Parliament. And as a preventative measure, it is true, those that are not vaccinated cannot be allowed to enter the parliamentary premises.
So how is it going to be enforced? How would they know that you have not been vaccinated?
There is a system, so you're given a blue card. So what you do, you send your copy of your blue card with all the details to the data processing unit of the Minister of Health. The Minister of Health will be able to validate that the document that you are holding is indeed valid, and it shows in their database that you have received COVID at such a clinic on this date. So if it's Johnson & Johnson, you've received it once. If it's AstraZeneca, which is the common one, you've received it twice. And then they will generate an electronic certificate. They'll send you a number. This number you use to claim your own certificate. So certificates are individualized, and they are electronic certificates.
I read another article, some people arguing that enforcing a vaccine mandate is a violation of their human rights. Do some members of parliament feel that way?
They do feel that way, and there are members of parliament that haven't been vaccinated, and some are religious reasons, some are just, they don't like it, they don't want it. Some, they have won their theories, they don't like vaccines, and they aren't vaccines, but they are in parliament. So the people that are saying it's a violation of their rights, they are true. Some members of parliament are complaining the same. They're saying, why should a member of parliament being given a leave of absence? Well, they are within parliament premises, but they are not allowed. Why can't they just do without? And then parliament is saying, no, there's an option where you can get the test. So the test only lasts 48 hours. So if you're in parliament, every 48 hours, you have to prove a new test result, which is quite expensive on the member of parliament because you have to pay those bills on your own.
Particularly with the new COVID-19 variant, the Omicron, don't you think members of parliament should take the lead to be vaccinated?
I believe members of parliament should take the lead to be vaccinated. But you know, there are things you cannot force on everyone, because even members of parliament have their rights. They feel they can do some things or not. Even members of parliament belong to religious groups. So at the end of the day, it's actually very difficult to justify to say, should members of parliament be vaccinated? There's some debate came on the floor of the House on something different. For example, the right for women to procure an abortion when they need to. Parliament is completely divided. So should members of parliament be proactive towards vaccinations? My answer would be straight up, we need to. But at the end of the day, members of parliament have their rights, and we cannot violate that. If you ask me individually as a member of parliament for my constituency, I am advocating for people in my constituency, Malawians out there, to go and get vaccinated.
Honorable Musuwa, it's so nice to talk with you, and happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you. Thank you very much for talking to me.
Victor Musuwa is a member of Malawi's parliament from the opposition Democratic Progressive Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. A spokesperson for Uganda's parliament has said contracting COVID-19 while in Tanzania was unavoidable after 50 staff and lawmakers tested positive on Tuesday after returning from a trip there. The group was in Arusha for the East African Legislative Assembly Games, a friendly sports event hosted by Tanzania for the region's parliament. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
The group was in Arusha for the East African Legislative Assembly Games, a friendly sports event hosted by Tanzania for the region's parliaments. Chris Obore, spokesperson for Uganda's parliament, was among the contingent that was in Arusha for the two-week-long event. Obore says upon returning to Uganda, the group took COVID-19 tests twice, both in Arusha and the Malaba border point, because they anticipated infections.
Because Uganda and Tanzania have different approaches to COVID fight. There are no soaps, there are no masks, there's no nothing. And yet the games are interactive. There's contact. There's no way Uganda would have escaped. For us, we're wearing masks, they've been thinking we are sick. They see you wearing a mask, they know these are Ugandans.
The tournament included events such as a walk race, a football, netball, golf, athletics, tug of war, and volleyball. The games brought together the national parliaments of Tanzania, Burundi, Kenya, and Uganda. Rwanda and South Sudan abstained from the games with apologies. Asked why Uganda did not skip the games, Obore says the government didn't want to start a political feud with a neighboring country. About 50 Ugandan legislators and staff members tested positive for COVID-19 upon returning home. Health Ministry spokesperson Emmanuel Ainebiona says the ministry is working with parliament to ensure the infected legislators and staff do not spread the disease.
That's why we even assisted in retesting them. So we have to first sequence them before we conclude on what kind of variant they have. They might be the normal COVID cases of the strains we've been registering.
For more than a year after the pandemic started, Tanzania's government insisted COVID was not present in the country and still does not collect data on the number of cases and deaths from the disease. Uganda has recorded about 130,000 confirmed coronavirus cases and nearly 3,300 deaths since March 2020. As of December 20th, 502 new cases of COVID-19 were recorded, including 25 cases of the new variant Omicron. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala, Uganda.
South African medical experts say a drop in coronavirus cases appears to indicate the country has passed the peak of a fourth wave of infections driven by the Omicron variant. Health officials say the Omicron variant spreads faster than past variants but has hospitalized far fewer patients. Linda Giftash reports from Johannesburg.
The number of new coronavirus cases in South Africa's most populous province of Gauteng is on the decline. Health officials say while some areas of the country are still seeing increases, most provinces are leveling off. More than 15,000 positive cases were reported Tuesday nationwide, a marked decline from the over 26,000 daily cases seen a week ago. Dr. Michelle Groom is with the National Institute for Communicable Diseases.
All indications are that we've seen the end of that we've surpassed the peak of infections in Gauteng. This is encouraging and quite optimistic in terms of the decreasing trends in case numbers. But I think we really do need to be cognizant that people are now traveling and there may be changes in terms of the number of people that may be testing. And so some of the lower numbers may be due to the holiday season.
Groom says Omicron is the dominant variant driving the wave, accounting for 95% of cases this month. While it has spread more rapidly than previous variants, it isn't causing the same level of severe illness. Dr. Wasila Jassad is a public health specialist at the National Institute for Communicable Diseases.
In terms of severity, there's a lower percentage of hospital admissions, a lower percentage of cases who've been admitted, and a lower percentage of admissions who have died. And there are signals towards lower severity amongst those admitted and shorter lengths of stay.
It's unclear if the lower level of hospitalizations is because Omicron is less severe than other variants or that the public is more resilient to the virus. Groom says as many as 70% of South Africans have some level of immunity to the coronavirus, either through vaccination or previous infection. Less than half of South African adults have been vaccinated despite ongoing government efforts urging people to get the shot. Experts say South Africa's experience with Omicron isn't necessarily a blueprint for other countries that have seen comparatively higher vaccination rates and lower levels of natural exposure. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that's it for this Thursday, December 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington saying, have a lovely day.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and a panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including President Joe Biden addressed the nation, highlighting the importance of COVID-19 vaccinations and new steps his administration is taking to combat the pandemic. We'll deliberate this topic and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.